It was the spring of 1977, and a certain movie trailer caught the attention of every nerd in my school. Not the popular kids, not the jocks, just the nerds, those of us who had begun reading science fiction as a hobby and had been transported by stories set in the far corners of the universe by this TV show named Star Trek. And up until that point in movie history, the wonder of those stories set in space had not yet, you know, been adequately captured. But this movie seemed like it just might do the trick. The movie was Star Wars. That's right. And here is the trailer that we all saw in 1977.
Somewhere in space, this may all be happening right now. 20th Century Fox and George Lucas, the man who brought you American Graffiti, now bring you an adventure unlike anything on your planet. Star Wars.
Here they come. Coming in too fast!
The story of a boy, a girl, and a universe. It's a big, sprawling space saga of rebellion and romance. It's a spectacle, light years ahead of its time.
I am C-3PO, human-cyborg relations, and this is my counterpart, R2-D2.
Hello.
It's an epic of heroes. And aliens from a thousand worlds. Star Wars, a billion years in the making. And it's coming to your galaxy this summer.
Now, I realize, yeah, some of you weren't alive at that time. I understand that. But for those of us who were, the spring of 1977, I mean, it's not all that exciting, right, compared to movie trailers as they're done today with, you know, lots of sound effects and, you know, tons of music and stuff, but it held promise to many of us. No one knew, of course, it would make any money. You know, science fiction wasn't very lucrative at the time, but those of us who were sci-fi fans, we had hope. And anyway, as now the second biggest movie of all time in terms of attendance, it's easy to say that Star Wars turned out to be bigger than anyone could have imagined. And most Americans at least have a basic understanding of the storyline, right? A basic understanding. There's this evil empire with all kinds of power, and there's these people who are resisting that are undertrained and under-resourced. And believe it or not, resisting the evil empire is our topic for today. So before I assume that all of you understand the basic storyline behind the Star Wars universe, I'm going to show you one more video to get us all on the same page, okay?
The Alliance to Restore the Republic, or as it was more commonly called, the Rebel Alliance, was a resistance group formed to battle the oppression of the Galactic Empire after the Clone Wars. What began as a number of small cells spread throughout the galaxy was organized into a movement under the leadership of Bail Organa and Mon Mothma. They were small in numbers, and recruits were passionate about their cause, but often undertrained. The rebellion's first major victory against the Empire was the theft of the plans to the planet-destroying battle station, the Death Star. In retaliation, the Empire destroyed Bail Organa's homeworld of Alderaan. Shortly after, the Death Star itself was destroyed in the Battle of Yavin by rebel hero and Jedi in training Luke Skywalker. The Alliance was forced to stay on the move for the next 3 years, always hunted by the Empire. when a second Death Star began construction, Rebel leadership decided to attack before it could become operational. When word arrived that the Emperor himself would be on board, they attacked with everything they had. They fell into the Emperor's trap, but against all odds, the Alliance was able to destroy the station and kill the Emperor. The Rebellion was able to push the Empire into hiding and reform as the New Republic.
Okay, so here's what I want you to keep in mind from this trailer, okay, as we move forward today. Number one, the Resistance was formed to battle the oppression of a vast evil empire. Right? Number two, what began as a small number of cells became a movement. Three, though the rebels were small in numbers and passionate about their cause, they were also under-trained and under-resourced. And then number four, against all odds, they were victorious. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, so it's not a difficult storyline to understand. In fact, it's the storyline of hundreds of films across all genres and thousands of different books. Good against evil, the weak against the strong, ordinary, average people against the powerful, lopsided odds of success. It's the classic David versus Goliath scenario. Now, what's really important to know about all of these stories that have this kind of storyline is that the only way a David actually beats a Goliath is by using unconventional tactics. Unconventional tactics, right? Unexpected strategies that do not follow the typical rules of engagement. I mean, this is how the Rebel Alliance kept defeating the evil empire, right? They used unconventional tactics that the evil empire wasn't prepared for. They engaged in what we call asymmetrical warfare. They made lethal strikes when and where the empire least expected it. They used people and robots that the empire had overlooked. This is how a David defeats a Goliath. Not by doing what the giant expects, but by doing what the giant does not expect. This is also the story of the American Revolution. My mother was a history teacher, U.S. history teacher, and so I heard this all the time. The colonists didn't, you know, line themselves up across from the British redcoats in a firing line and fight with honor the way the British had expected. Instead, they did what the enemy did not expect. They led sorties and sniper attacks from the sidelines, and they basically broke every rule that the British and other European powers had established for honorable warfare. For a David to defeat a Goliath, unconventional tactics have to be employed. It's the only way to level the playing field. In fact, if you look into the David and Goliath story in 1 Samuel 17, you'll see this very clearly. You know, the Israelites and the Philistines were staring across the battlefield at each other, and then a giant of a man stepped out from behind the Philistine lines. He was a good foot taller than anyone else. And he called out a challenge to the Israelites to send forth your best warrior to engage in hand-to-hand combat, and the winner would secure victory for the entire army. And the Israelites, they noted that Goliath was not only taller and stronger than everyone else, but he also was wearing bronze armor that weighed over 100 pounds that covered virtually every inch of his body. So your sword or your spear or your arrow had very little chance of penetrating that armor. And Goliath also had three separate weapons. He had these close-range javelin, a close-range sword, and then a mid-range spear that could actually pierce another man's armor, is what the scripture says. So to fight Goliath toe-to-toe was ridiculous. No Israelite could hope to defeat him on his own terms. And so David, who was a teenage boy visiting his brothers in the army, he had the courage to accept the challenge. He didn't do what Goliath expected. He didn't come to him as Goliath requested in close combat. He didn't fight with conventional weapons. He used a sling to throw a stone from long range. Not mid-range where Goliath's spear could impale him, or close range where his javelin or his, you know, sword could decapitate him. He threw it from long range and defeated the giant, because that's what's required for a David to defeat a Goliath, who is bigger, stronger, and better equipped. I have my own David and Goliath story that proves the truth of this. Would you like to hear it? I figured you would. I was 22 years old and leading a music group from Zeus Pacific during the summer, and we were leading worship and being the counselors at high school camps all across California. And in week number four, in camp number four, there was a pillow fight contest the second night in the main hall. And the first few fights were very entertaining as high school boys basically pounded each other with pillows. And then out from behind the crowd stepped a giant of a teenager. He was close to 300 pounds and was over 6'4". His pillow was heavy and king size. I swear, it was 5 feet tall, his pillow. I mean, he must have known this contest was coming because there's no way you bring that size of pillow to camp. And the current champion lasted one blow before he was on his knees, and the giant was now the champion. And so the giant circled the ring, glaring out at all potential opponents. And the crowd became very uneasy because no one was willing to step up. It was certain defeat, and of course, high school boys don't want to be defeated or embarrassed in front of their friends. So you can guess what happened next. The high schoolers called on the counselors, on us, and all of my fellow band members took one step backwards. Now, at this time in my life, I was 160 pounds, very fit, but only 160 pounds, which is a good 35 pounds ago. And I was not stupid. I didn't want to have my pride beat out of me in front of everyone, and so just when I was going to decline, I saw across the room the one girl that I was interested in. She smiled at me. Her name was Rocio, and she was one of my singers at that time. We weren't dating. So I took my life in my own hands. One of my friends handed me a small pillow. I swear it was a throw one from like your sofa. And I stepped into the ring. And the giant didn't even wait a moment before landing a blow on my back that took my breath away. Seriously, it was so hard, I lost all breath. I barely managed to stay on my feet. And I knew at that moment that if he landed another blow, it was over. But like I said, I've seen Star Wars. I had watched Luke Skywalker defeat the Death Star. He used unconventional tactics, so I knew I had to do the same. And so as the Star Wars theme began playing in my head, because that's what happens in my life, I have themes playing through my head constantly. In fact, when one of you comes to talk to me on a Sunday, I begin hearing a theme in my head. That's just yours. The Star Wars theme began playing, and I watched as the giant went to take one more big swing at me. And this time, instead of turning my back to absorb the blow, I turned toward it and ducked. If it had hit me in the head, I would not be here today. I can guarantee you that. But I ducked, and I felt the wind of the pillow pass over my head. He swung so hard, you could hear it cut through the air. A pillow, right? So time slowed to a crawl in that moment, and I felt the wind of the pillow passing over me, and before he could do a backswing, with all my might, I took my little pillow and swung it with all the strength my body could muster at the back of his left knee. And what do you think happened? The giant fell. Because even giants can't resist gravity when their left knee collapses. And the crowd was stunned into silence for a moment. And then they roared a great victory cheer. It was the greatest moment of my life. Except for last week, which the ordination was pretty great too. But did I cheat in that contest? No, I just didn't follow his rules. If we had played this game of hitting each other's torso, I would have lost a lung probably. But I didn't. I attacked where he was most vulnerable, where he least expected. So my pillow in the back of his left knee was David's stone to Goliath's forehead. And that girl that I was interested in became interested in me in that moment as she realized that I was not just a musician. I was a man. And she's my wife today. So David versus Goliath, the alliance versus the empire. This is a story arc that all of us love. So what does all this have to do with rest? You know, we've been in this series for 2 weeks now. This is our third week. So we've discussed how taking a Sabbath day of rest each week allows us, first of all, to acknowledge that God is at the center of all creation, present and engaged, and desiring to be invited into the center of our own lives where he can take up residence there. And when we do that, our lives become ordered properly where God is the king, ruling from the very center. And then second, this is what we talked about last week, upon setting the Sabbath aside, it becomes an act of receiving from God, from the king, the one who can provide all things, receiving from God all that God wants to pour into our lives. This moves us from feeling like we're responsible for everything and being very, very productive to understanding that as king, God can provide us with the resources that we need the most. So our sense of identity and our worth and our value, God can supply that. And the healing and the comfort and the counsel that all of us need when we're going through periods of darkness, God can provide that. The security we long for, God can provide that. When we Sabbath, we are teaching ourselves, training ourselves to move from feeling like everything depends upon us to believing in the provision of God. And now this week, I am proposing that when we Sabbath, we aren't just receiving good things from God, we are also resisting bad things. We are resisting evil. Now, the evil in our world might not look, you know, like a Death Star, but it's present nonetheless. And it's a force we have to contend with. Here are some words I'm going to put on the screen here that describe the empire that controls most of our world today. Stress, worry, and anxiety, fear of all kinds, grumbling and complaining, jealousy and greed, lack of self-control, lack of contentment, dishonesty, arrogance, power, control issues, and violence as a means to an end. Right? The evil empire that we live within today is defined by this list. And they are collectively very powerful. They seek control over us. They seek to divide one person against another. They are the opposite of what God intended. And all of them lead to death. Not physical death necessarily, but spiritual and emotional, social death. So because Adam sinned in the garden, death came to all humans, is what the Apostle Paul says. And this is what death looks like in our world. So when we invite God to reside at the center of our lives and be king, we are in a very tangible way joining a rebel alliance. We are joining the resistance to all the ways and means that keep evil in power in our world. This is why the Apostle Paul describes our life with God in militaristic terms. Ephesians 6, 11 through 13, Paul says, "Put on the full armor of God so that you can stand against the schemes of the devil. For our struggle is not against flesh and blood, but against the rulers, against the authorities, against the cosmic powers of this darkness, against evil spiritual forces in the heavens. For this reason, take up the full armor of God so that you may be able to resist in the evil day. And having prepared everything to take your stand." Do you hear the militaristic theme that's running through all of that? In Paul's mind, there's a battle going on. And if you're following Jesus, you're on the side of light resisting the darkness. Now, the darkness in our world might not be centered in a single person like Darth Vader or the Emperor, or it might not have a central location like the Death Star, but that doesn't mean it's not real. We all experience the power of darkness in our lives at various times. The Apostle John describes it this way in 1 John 2. It says, "Do not love the world or the things in the world. If anyone loves the world, the love of the Father is not in him. For everything in the world, the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, the pride in one's possessions, it's not from the Father, but it's from the world." So there's this theme running throughout the New Testament that followers of Jesus, those within whom God resides, are supposed to be in active rebellion against the way of the world, the way the vast majority of the people of the world think and act. In this case, John mentions the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, pride in what you possess. I mean, all these things are temporary and destructive in their own way. And followers of Jesus are supposed to resist that way of thinking. So again, I ask the question, what does any of this have to do with rest, with honoring the Sabbath? Well, one of the books that we're using as a resource for this series is called Sabbath as Resistance. This is by a scholar named Walter Brueggemann. And this is how he describes the value of Sabbath in our fight against the way of the world. He says, in our own contemporary context of the rat race of anxiety, the celebration of Sabbath is an act of resistance because it is a visible insistence that our lives are not defined by the production and consumption of commodity goods. In other words, when we set aside the Sabbath one day a week and that day involves, you know, actions like worship and fellowship and other relaxation, you know, we're saying that life isn't only about being productive, that life isn't only about what makes me feel good, but in that act, it becomes a visible insistence that our lives are not defined by the world, by the evil empire. We might be in the world, but we are not of it. We resist the ideal that what we do determines our value. So he says, in our own contemporary context of the rat race of anxiety, the celebration of Sabbath is an act of resistance because it is a visible insistence that our lives are not defined by the production and consumption of commodity goods. Then he goes on, such an act of resistance requires enormous intentionality and communal reinforcement amid the barrage of seductive pressure from the insatiable insistences of the market. So the act of setting aside one day in seven is an act of resistance that requires lots of intentionality, and I love this, communal reinforcement, which is a way to describe the faith village. Communal reinforcement. And you probably never thought of church attendance this way, right? As an act of resistance against the world and against the worldwide system of evil. And yet it is. Every time you set aside one day in seven, a day for rest, and gather with other people who are doing the same, it reinforces communally the idea that we are all in this together. We are all in this alliance. We are rebelling against the system of the world. If you remember that idea from the movie trailer I showed earlier, it described the resistance as what began as a number of small cells became a movement, right? Well, that's what church is. It's a number of individual and family units that come together and band together because they're strength in numbers, and they agree together that their battle is not against each other, it's not against flesh and blood, but it's against the powers, the evil power in the world. Every time we stop working and set aside this day for communal reinforcement, we are actively resisting the powers of evil in our world. And we're not fighting the way the world fights either. We're using unconventional tactics because rest is most definitely unconventional. That's why we feel completely out of step with the rest of our culture when we do it. To most people, attending church on your only day off is not a very productive way to spend your life, right? When we do it, it's unconventional. It's asymmetrical warfare. It's resisting in ways the enemy would never consider. Rest, peace, joy, love, righteousness, self-sacrifice. These are the kind of tactics that Goliath laughs at. Those aren't real weapons, are they? 2 Corinthians 10 says, for though we walk in the world, we do not fight according to this world's rules of warfare. The weapons of the war we're fighting are not of this world, but are powered by God and effective at tearing down the strongholds erected against his truth. We are demolishing arguments and ideas, every high and mighty philosophy that pits itself against the knowledge of the one true God. And what is perhaps the most interesting thing to me about this idea of Sabbath as resistance is the communal aspect. Because frankly, you can stop working a day out of seven and spend it by yourself. You know, I often do that, not on Sundays, but I do that. It's helpful in renewing my strength, spending time by myself. You know, as an introvert, that really helps me a lot. But spending the Sabbath alone is not the same thing as spending it with other small cells of people who are gathering together. Because the only way to become a movement is to gather together. The only way to become a David who has enough presence and resources to defeat the Goliath that we are talking about, which is worldwide, is to move from thinking of our lives exclusively as individuals and understand that we are part of a movement. I mean, this was Han Solo's problem, right? All throughout. All he thought about was himself. All he really wanted to do was just fly his Millennium Falcon, make some money, and stay clear of this fight that was going on. The Empire, the Resistance, he didn't care about any of it. He didn't want to join a side. He just wanted to be left alone. He just wanted to be neutral. But in the end, he had to choose a side. He had to make a choice. He had to move from exclusivity to engagement. And that changed everything for him. And if, for those of you who know the Star Wars story, you know that his participation ended up giving the Rebel Alliance a set of ideas and plans that were completely unconventional, asymmetrical. He didn't follow the accepted rules of engagement, but that's what's required for a David to beat a Goliath. So perhaps today you kind of feel like Han Solo. I mean, you wish you could just, you know, be left alone, worship on your own at the beach, at the park. I understand all of that. But the reality is that the evil in this world creates systems of destruction. You can't avoid it forever, and you can't ignore it forever. Sooner or later, the evil in our world touches you or touches someone you love, and you're forced with a decision. Sooner or later, you have to choose a side. And in this case, when it comes to the kingdom of life against the kingdom of darkness, if you aren't with the Rebel Alliance, you're headed toward death. So there's actually no Switzerland in the spiritual conflict, right? No. But if you choose to be part of the alliance, which in Greek is named ekklesia, the assembly of the righteous, then keeping the Sabbath is a critical commitment that you and your family make. It provides a kind of rest for you that nothing else can, and allows you to receive from God the provision that you need, and it allows us to all collectively resist the powers of the world. Jesus is the leader of this Rebel Alliance, right? And he calls you to leave behind your individualism and be willing to gather with others one day out of seven for training and renewal, for the development of faith, hope, and love, for the strategizing of plans of attack, you know, for the development of the fruit of the Spirit that serve as resources in our battle that we're engaged in. Resources that are very, very unconventional. Who battles with love? For those of you who aren't aware, we do meet here every Sunday at 10 a.m. And we do meet every Sunday. So perhaps, I mean, it's not your leader's jobs to make you feel guilty. It's just our job to make you aware of the opportunities. So perhaps you at this point have been committed to attending 3 out of 4 weeks a month. That's incredible. How about trying for 4? For those of you who make it half the time, 2 out of 4. That's good. How about 3? For those of you whom this is your one time a month, and we'll see you, thank you. And we'd love to see you more. We can't become a movement unless small cells of people gather together. I hope you'll consider leaving behind the idea of exclusivity and move toward engaging and engage with this community of rebels in their rest. Let's pray. God, I'm not going to thank you this morning for Star Wars, but I do thank you for these stories that we all love. The idea of overcoming all kinds of odds to win a great victory. We acknowledge that the stories that we do have teach us how we are supposed to fight, and it's not the way the enemy fights. We're supposed to do the opposite, actually. So in our desire to change our world and to engage as a church, I pray that you would teach us what the weapons are that you would most recommend for us, representing you here on earth, that we would fight as children of the light, not children of darkness. And the enemy would constantly be surprised at what that looks like. We thank you, Jesus, for calling us all into your family, and we understand it as being a great privilege. Be with us now as we respond in your name.